Now, in studio, your lending expert, family man, and servant leader, who's committed to honoring and empowering San Diego's servant leaders to rise up. Your host of Rise Up Radio, James Carmody.
Good afternoon, San Diego. Hoping you're having a great San Diego, America's finest city. I'm here with you. James is not here today. James is actually doing some test pilot stuff in rockets. Instead, you got Phil Kendrow and Eve Nasby that are here with them on Rise Up Radio. And we're celebrating our 121st episode, which I'm really excited about. Eve, how are you doing today?
I am awesome. And I'm so glad and blessed to be in studio with you. My favorite Marine, former Aviate pilot turned JetBlue pilot. So congratulations on that.
Thanks much. Appreciate that.
You're awesome.
Yeah, it's been a lot of good time. But, you know, we've always got awesome folks in the audience.
Do.
And we've got in the audience as well as on the phone today. So today we've got Stephen Talon, Jay Garcia. Stephen, how are you doing out there today?
Excellent, excellent. Good to be here.
Thanks for joining us on the phone. I really do appreciate it. So, Stephen, you know, we've got some great Fortinet and some great veteran programs you're working with. But let's find out first about Stephen Talon that we've got on the phone. So if you want to kick it off and tell us a little about what's going on.
Right on. So, Stephen Talon, Senior Director, MSSP and Service Enablement at Fortinet. So I lead a team of professionals with backgrounds in managed security service provider operations and service creation, automation, and like. And we support partners that are, having a real challenge in finding cybersecurity individuals to staff the defenses. And as a result, U.S. economy globally, the global economy is being negatively impacted to the tune of billions of dollars as a result of, undefended networks. So we're doing a lot of work to try to make that situation better and reduce the losses.
And Stephen, how did you get to this point to become the senior director in MSSP? So you have to explain, my brain's not that big sometimes. So what is MSSP as well for Fortinet?
So managed security service providers is the nomenclature. And what it is it's a partner that basically provides outsourced security services to businesses, the government, educational institutions, and the like. And it does so as a result of the increased complexity of defending networks. So it's getting so hard to do. It's similar to, nobody has a well in their backyard for drinking water or burns coal for electricity. They might be able to actually go out and do it, but it'd be so expensive for them to do on their own, subtle and complex, that they outsource that to, specialized entities. And managed security service providers are that entity that provides the security services and the engineering, the technology, the ongoing management and monitoring. And economy, across the economy, businesses of all sizes are looking towards that type of specialized, service provider to help them mitigate the lack of cybersecurity skills and the increasing complexity of keeping the bad guys out of their networks.
I like that. That's what I use a lot.
Yeah. What are some of the biggest mistakes companies are doing right now with regards to cybersecurity?
Assuming that they are not a target. Probably number one. Oh, I might make shoes or, I make lays or something, and who's coming after me? That's probably one of the most common ones. The other one is that I've never been breached, so why should I be worried about it? Fact of the matter is, and you can talk to, the FBI will be the first to tell you, Department of Homeland Security as well, that, you probably already have been hacked, you just don't know it.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, that's interesting. San Diego Business Journal, actually, they had a pretty good spiel about the cybersecurity, was talking about this, and Stephen, they were talking about the same thing, that everybody should have a much better focus on cybersecurity. It doesn't matter if you're a one-person shop or a multi-billion dollar company. And and Stephen, and here in the studio, too, we've got Jay Garcia, I know is one of your motivating team members. So, Jay, good afternoon. How are you doing, too?
How are you doing, Phil? Happy to be here.
Awesome. So you're doing outreach. Jay, I see you all the time on LinkedIn. I love seeing you out there. I've been glad to see you at the VBC. And looking and talking with the veterans and stuff. So how did you get associated with Fortinet?
Well, like I said, I was transitioning out of the military. I was a Marine Corps recruiter for 15 of those 20 years. And on my way to transition, there's many programs that are out there available that assist many veterans. Mm-hmm. So I attended different transitioning courses throughout the bases here local, as well as groups out in town. Vet CTEP is one of those. Now, coming through transitioning process, I was introduced to the FortiVet program. I was hesitant at first. Many veterans, as they transition out of the military, they're kind of scared of that transition. They don't know the resources that are out there available. So what I did is I contacted Andrew Adrian, and he connected me with FortiVet program. I went through the program. It's a great program, and I actually got hired to run it now. So
what do you mean went through the program?
Well, part of the FortiVet program is that veterans that apply for a program, Fortinet has a great transitioning program. So what the FortiVet program is that we facilitate the transition of service members that are getting out of the military that are trying to get into the cybersecurity industry. Mm. So we provide training, certifications, mentorship, coaching, and then we'll connect them with our Fortinet hiring managers as well as our hiring managers for our partner companies, those MSSPs that Stephen Talon was talking about earlier.
So it's important for our listeners to understand there's two different words here, Fortinet and FortiVet.
That is
and
correct.
And so the program, FortiVet is the company, and you guys have, what, keep me honest here, Stephen, 5,000 employees, 5,000 partners, right?
Yeah, Fortinet is the company. So 350,000 customers, 5,000 to 7,000 partners globally, number one shipping security vendor in the world today. And 5,000 employees around the world and about 100 offices distributed globally.
And FortiVet, Jay, is the program you got into. And is this a free program for veterans to go through, or what does that look like?
It is absolutely a free program for veterans to go through it. They apply. Like I say, they'll get interviewed for the program. I do an initial interview to kind of see where they're at as far as their resumes, their soft skills coming out of the military. And then from there, I would recommend him to do a second interview with the program manager, which is Jeff Kreinling. He's the one that decides whether the veteran makes it or not into the FortiVet program. So, we're looking at, can this veteran, is he hireable? Do they know what they're looking for? Can they speak to their resume? Do they have good communication skills? And then Jeff, who's the program manager, will assign him into the program.
How long is the program? Sorry, Phil.
It's all good.
You do get to talk during this program.
No, it's all good.
I'm so curious. I'm super excited.
Well, the FortiVet program, we actually have the veteran in there for 6 months.
Wow.
For those 6 months, we're able to go guide, coach, mentor the veteran, provide a NSC certification, which is a free Fortinet certification for them.
What's that certification stand for?
Network Security Expert.
Yeah.
So they're NSC 1 certification. They get it for free. What we're trying to do is make sure that their resume is more colorful. They have access to the latest and greatest training out there with Fortinet, but also we point them in the right direction where to get other type of trainings and certifications in various platforms with our partners.
And you know what? The thing is, I really want to do the foot stomper on this one is about the fact that it's a free program.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting because I know that Jay's familiar with a number of veteran programs here in San Diego.
Right.
And every once in a while, I get that transitioning service member, that male or female, says all of a sudden, hey, I've got this really good program. It's going to cost me this much money or this much for my resume. And FortiVet, it's just another great program that's out there giving free internship and learning to make sure you're getting prepared as you're going to cybersecurity. And Stephen, really, I'm hearing, I guess your dad, I think, was possibly in the military. Maybe that's why you have an affiliation. Is that possibly something back that you're interested with veterans there, Stephen?
Yeah. I'm a Navy brat. So my dad's a branch of service, trucked you guys around to do your fighting and whatnot. Dad retired a two-star flag officer in the Navy and did quite a few things. Actually was a Top Gun instructor.
Wow.
And then became the J3 for NATO during the wars. And I've moved all around, all over my all over the country and parts of Europe growing up, and recognized that the sacrifice made not only by the service members but the families. And so that, is near and dear to my heart. Mm-hmm. When I see, the level of discomfort and actual fear, for transitioning veterans when they, they've served their country, they've served a greater purpose, and they are absolutely, terrified in a lot of scenarios at, having to, try to, translate what they've done into something applicable in the civilian sector. And unfortunately, there's a lot of talk, in the civilian sector about, helping veterans and doing good things, but there are very few activities that are actually being done in a lot of scenarios. So everybody wants to thank you for your service and all that.
Right.
But really what we were trying to do with this program is, not provide a handout, or a pat on the back, but a hand up. And help those transitioning veterans identify the industry, because the challenge is, when we were going to these workshops, these career fairs, we would find all of this, the employers there were police officers, sheriff's department, mm-hmm. physical security companies. So there's this assumption that if you served in the military, that you're going to only be able to really do the kinetic end of something. And we, our message to that crowd is that, look, there's a 0% unemployment rate in the cybersecurity industry for every candidate a job.
Yep.
There's 1.6 million jobs that are going to be unfilled by 2019. And literally, as a result, you know, the cost of cybersecurity is in the billions of dollars globally. And the fact of the matter is that the veterans didn't really realize, the ones that we talked to, and we started doing the briefings, they didn't realize that this industry existed. They assumed that everything in cybersecurity was going to be, you know, some sort of a propeller head kind of job, a real technical kind of job. And they didn't identify the fact that there were a ton of translatable and relatable skills that made them an ideal candidate for a cybersecurity position. So really, it's a big part of this program is increasing the awareness on base and providing, you know, a career industry sort of training on cybersecurity. And we really talk very little about Fortinet. I mean, this is when we call this doing well while doing good. We're definitely benefiting from it by helping our partners staff the defenses. But we don't really, you know, pitch ourselves much in these trainings. It's really about providing an overview of the opportunities that exist in cybersecurity and the translatable skills that they possess.
Well, that's awesome. You know, and make sure we understand everybody knows what you're talking about. So again, it's Fortivet, that's Fortivet, which is what the company Fortinet, Fortinet, which you can actually find at fortinet.com. Again, Fortinet.com. Again, we got Stephen Tallon on the phone. We've got Jay Garcia, you know, talking about helping out those veterans. Really love that a lot. You know, I'm sure your dad, who's out there in Virginia Beach, excited about Top Gun 2 coming out, or he's just going to be mocking it a lot, but I'm sure as a Top Gun instructor, yeah. But again, hey, we're with Rise Up Radio, again, empowering San Diego servant leaders, encouraging you to rise up. You can find us at sdriseup.com. This is Phil Kendrow and the always awesome Eve Nasby with Jay Garcia and Steven on the phone. Thank you so much.
AM 1170, The Answer.
Hey folks, James Carmody, Synergy One Lending. Are you in the market to buy a property and need to close really fast? Synergy One Lending and the Carmody team is your family-owned mortgage bank. Right now, there's low inventory, there's a lot of offers, it's competitive. Synergy One Lending and the Carmody team can close your loan in as little as 10 days. Call today to find out more. 858-525-3086. Call James Carmody and the Carmody team at Synergy One Lending, 858-525-3086.
Hi, James Carmody here, host of Rise Up Radio and a member of the San Diego Leadership Forum with an invitation for you. Our annual summit for the San Diego Leadership Forum is coming up on Tuesday, June 5th at 7 a.m. at the Hanley Hotel, where we're celebrating another exciting year, encouraging, equipping, and engaging our passions. So join us June 5th at the Hanley Hotel. For more information, go to sandiegoleadershipforum.org. That's sandiegoleadershipforum.org, and I can't wait to see you there.
Today we decided to walk to school. At the corner, we waited to cross the street. The stoplight counted down. 15, 14, 41,
31, I mean 13.
We took a left on Carroll Garden Street.
Garden Street?
Loud music was coming from a car. Danny's a smart kid, but he gets so distracted.
There were so many other sounds, I didn't know what to focus on.
Danny, Earth to Danny. Suddenly, he realized he forgot his homework again.
I left my homework on the table.
At the school steps, we hugged goodbye. I really hope he doesn't have another bad day at school today.
When you can see learning and attention issues from their side, you can be on their side. That's why there's understood.org, a free online resource for the parents of the 1 in 5 kids with learning and attention issues. Get personalized recommendations, practical tips, daily access to experts, and more. Go from misunderstanding to understood.org. Brought to you by Understood and the Ad Council.
Hey folks, James Carmody, the host of Rise Up Radio, your source for good news in the San Diego community. We are sharing the good news about what's going on. We need your help. If you are listening to us, please stop what you're doing. Go to sdriseup.com. In the bottom right corner of the page, there's a button that says, I will rise up. We need your help in sharing the good news in San Diego's community. Whether it's the local pastor of your church, your kid's little league coach, or small business owner, we want to share the good news. So go to sdriseup.com and share the stories.
AM 1170, The Answer.
We're all dancing in the studio. Y'all throw up your hands. Come on.
I love this music. James, I love your choice of music. We're getting some better 80s music out. That's awesome. Always a little Michael Jackson in the background. Hey, anyway, welcome back to Rise Up Radio. Again, the audience you got are in the studio. You got Phil Kendrick, you got Eve Nasby, you got Jay Garcia, you got Stephen Talent on the phone with Fort Annette. James is out today practicing for the Belmont Stakes, so unfortunately he's missing out with us. And again, empowering San Diego servant leaders encourage you to rise up. Eve, you've got a couple questions here.
I do. You know, as we were leaving, I wanted to talk about how veterans out there tend to be underemployed. They get out of the military, knee-jerk reaction is to take first available. But hey, guys, take a step back, jump into cybersecurity where you are guaranteed almost a job as soon as you graduate with your certification. So talk about a little bit about the salary ranges that folks can expect in cybersecurity. No guarantees when they come out of your program they get this, but I think it's important to know that you don't have to accept a job for $11 an hour. When you get out, get the certifications. Can you talk a little bit about what that looks like? And then if you could jump into what those translatable skills are that folks might not be thinking about. Steve, can you?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so you know, depending on the position, what we see is the entry level sort of starting base is in the $65,000 to $75,000 range. That's for a non-technical type of an operator. The more technical positions, when you start getting into engineering, range in the $110,000 to $150,000 range for, you know, the engineering type roles. And then if you get into the real Gucci, you know, threat analyst, you know, type positions, you know, dark web monitoring and pen testing and things like that, you can get into even the higher ranges. So it's a healthy income. And it really is one of those things where, you know, you mentioned it. A lot of veterans that we talk to, they come out and they're urgent to get into something. And they oftentimes take that first step that isn't the first step because they feel a level of urgency that they have to make a decision about something to get the income coming in.
Right.
And what we always guide them on is, hey, wait to get a couple offers in hand before you spring on one of these, because a lot of times once you start heading down the path as a burger flipper or a cell phone tower hanger, it's real hard to get yourself out of that and get into something that you really want to be doing. So it's almost better to not take that first job and wait until you've got some decent offers before you make the move. I'm happy to outline what those relatable skills are, because a lot of times they don't even know they have them, even though they've spent their career in the military gaining what we consider to be, you know, demonstrably impactful skills that translate directly to cybersecurity. So I can cover those if you'd like.
Please.
Yeah. So, you know, one of the core functions that is trained into them is structured leadership training. I think that's critically important, because you don't see college kids coming out of college with structured leadership training. I mean, a 23-year-old Marine is teaching classes on how to brush your teeth or how to, you know, put your collar stays on, and he's teaching a class of other Marines that. So right out of the gates, they're teaching, they're leading. Diversity and inclusion in action. There is no, you know, disincluding someone because of race, religion, their economic backgrounds. In the military, it's all one team, one fight, and that is something that is ingrained in them into the very early phases. And I saw that when my dad was involved in the incorporation of women into the Navy, and there were all kinds of detractors to that concept in the political space. You know, for all kinds of reasons, thinking that, you know, a woman can't carry a guy up a ladder. You know, everybody's going to get pregnant. There's all these reasons why you wouldn't want to bring women onto a ship for 6 months, but that didn't matter, because the inclusion in action is a critical function in the military, and women came in and made a big difference and are making a big difference on a daily basis as a result of that. And you can go back to equal rights and inclusion, you know, from a racial perspective as well, that the military, doesn't matter your background, your race, religion, or creed, you're going to work in a team kind of environment, and that's an important part of the cybersecurity function. Communications and technology. I mean, you know, everybody loves watching these military shows, and you'll see that our military operators are using high-end technology to do their job. And so they're just naturally, you know, geared towards using technology and capitalizing on technology and putting it to effect for the mission purposes. Force protection and situational awareness. I mean, that is something that is ingrained into every military operator. You know, you got to protect your people. You got to protect whatever you're supposed to be there to protect. And you have to be aware of your situation and the environment in order to do so. So that's another one of those things that's ingrained in an early phase and throughout their service in the military. And it's something that applies directly to cybersecurity. And probably one of the last ones, but equally important, is intelligence and kinetic warfare. Mm. The fact of the matter today is the new state of warfare. It's called hybrid war, right? And so it is cybersecurity attacks that turn your lights off. Turn off the cell phone network, right? You see that in the Ukraine with the way the Russians attacked the Ukrainians. So in the military, you're trained to understand that the first thing they're going to do is try and take out your communications, and then they're going to start hitting you with the kinetic aspects. But the combination of an understanding of that, as well as the importance of intelligence, are critical components that are trained into the military operator and are directly applicable to the cybersecurity industry.
Excellent, Stephen. You know, Jay, I've got a quick question for you. We obviously know that cybersecurity really is an industry. So can you talk to some of the potential careers? Because I know that if I think of cybersecurity, I think of some guy sitting in front of a computer trying to break a code or, you
in
know.
In a very, very dark space.
Eating Cheetos and Coke. All right. So talk about the potential careers and also some of those common positions that are found within those careers.
Well, you know, that's a great question. And I often see, you know, a lot of service members, they'll go to a career fair, a hiring event, and they'll see a booth that is, you know, cybersecurity booth, and they just walk by it because they're not, they're not technically inclined. They're not looking to do cyber and once they get out of the military. But I reel them in and I tell them, you know, that the industry is pretty huge. You know, through our FortiVet program, you know, yes, you know, because the industry is cybersecurity, a lot of our candidates, our veterans that are getting hired have that technical background. But we have been able to assist veterans get into marketing, sales, logistics, project management. So it's huge. It's a huge industry. You know, for example, Fortinet, I was able to get hired through the FortiVet program on a human resources sales role. Hmm. So the industry is pretty huge for those veterans that are just looking to get find meaningful employment once they get out of the military.
Right, because I don't have a 50-pound brain, and so when I see the cybersecurity stuff, and when I used to have my IT guy start talking, my brain started bleeding. And so, you know, some of that stuff, that's intimidating. But we all know that it is so important to have more of a cybersecurity role out there. And, you know, so we're talking a lot about businesses and but like, Jane, Steve, like, you know, Phil, I'm here. What am I supposed to be doing for my own cybersecurity? Like, what am I, as a single person, married person, what should we be doing? Jay, let you answer this first, if you don't mind. When it comes to just basic stuff, passwords, email, cloud.
I'm glad you asked that question because we just did this through our family, you know, resetting passwords on a continuously basis, you know, educating. You know, education, not just us, but our friends, our peers, our parents to include. You know, there's many bad actors out there that are just looking to find, you know, a weak individual. When I say weak, you know, not educated, not updating their passwords. So that's something, you know, that I would highly recommend to every family out there. You know, when it comes to PII, you know, personal identifiable information, on a simple resume, they have a name, they have a complete street address, they have their phone number, they have their email. A bad actor can simply just hack into a school system and be able to get a date of birth and a social security card. They can have fun in Vegas at our expense. So education is huge. And I'm pretty sure Steven's got something else.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that is most commonly done is everybody has the same password for everything. And you know, that means that if you're hacked in one place, then everything is lost. So having different passwords, while it seems like a hassle, you know, you can use different password, generators and password management software programs to, you know, remember all that stuff. But, you know, that is one of the big ones. The other aspect is phishing and email. So 90% of all breaches are a result of a phishing, attack. And the attackers are getting really good. In the old days, it used to be they'd misspell things and you could pretty much tell that it wasn't a legit email. But these days they're getting so good. Mm-hmm. You know, you're seeing UPS shipping tracking notifications, mm-hmm. Notification from the DHS, from IRS, and it looks really, really good. And basically, you know, you click on the link and you're hosed. So phishing, I think, is probably one of the things that everybody should be looking out for. And that's any type of email that even if it comes from somebody that you know. You know, a lot of times their Gmail or Yahoo has been hacked and they're basically saying, hey, you know, I lost my passport and I'm stuck in Mallorca, Spain. Mm-hmm. You know, can you wire Western Union $300
so you're saying that was wrong.
My way home?
That was, you know, he was from Russia. He needed help.
And I don't have a rich uncle in the Congo.
Yes.
I'm so bummed.
It's like the Nigerian prince. Yeah, it's like a Nigerian prince. You could have been a millionaire if you just spent $10,000, right?
But I think cybercrime is expected to cost the world $6 trillion by 2021. We all need to be doing our part. I know. Change your passwords.
So aside from the passwords, also, you know, we keep hearing about, and we only got a couple minutes here left with you all, which we really appreciate. Again, we got Jay Garcia and Stephen Talent from Fortinet. And of course, Jay went through the Fortivet program, which was awesome. You know, we talked about email. What about social media? You know, Facebook and Google aren't looking too well. And I know right now they're listening to everything we say. And so what about social media? Is there anything for a quick 60 seconds about social media, about how much that you should release on that?
Yeah, you've got to really watch that, because that is the recon mechanism for every hacker. You know, the military is actually stopping the Facebook, you know, updates and posts, because, you know, you can be isolated to where you physically are, what you're doing. You know, people that sit there and take pictures of their food that they're eating, and you know, that's all GPS trackable. And literally, you're giving away your position, getting broken into. The cell phone network was recently broken into, and hackers were able to isolate down to a couple of yards the individuals that were on phones. So social media is a big problem from a security perspective, because that's where they can aggregate and gather information on you and put that information together to create a target profile. So I would definitely be careful about what you put under your, you know, onto your social media exploits, and how much you keep, you know, posting where you are and what you're doing, especially if you're somebody that's, you know, got something to lose.
Mm. Awesome. Wow.
Well, hey, we got just a little more time, but hey, again, I want to thank Stephen Talent and Jay Garcia again from Fortinet for being here again. You can find their information on www.fortinet. That's FORTINET.com. Again, this is Rise Up Radio with SDRiseUp.com. You can find out about us, and we're really enjoying having you guys this afternoon. We've got John Valencia, the Executive Director, Office of Homeland Security for the City of San Diego. So we're all about security. I'm going to feel much more safe when I leave here today. Again, Phil Kendro and Eve Nasby, and we are asking you to rise up.
AM 1170, The Answer, San Diego.
Hey folks, James Carmerdine, the host of Rise Up Radio, your source for good news in the San Diego community. We are sharing the good news about what's going on. We need your help. If you are listening to this, please stop what you're doing. Go to SDRiseUp.com. In the bottom right corner of the page, there's a button that says, I will rise up. We need your help in sharing the good news in San Diego's community. Whether it's the local pastor of your church, your kid's Little League coach, or small business owner, we want to share the good news. So go to SDRiseUp.com and share the stories.
Welcome back to The Dog Show. Up next, we have Satchmo. Satchmo is a member of the Shelter Pet Group.
That's right, a group known especially for their couch-snuggling, ball-chasing, face-licking, tail-wagging, backyard-hanging, and of course, companionship.
And what breed would you say Satchmo is?
I'd have to go with maybe a Labish Terrier Hound Chihuahua-looking kind of mix.
Tremendous dog.
I'd also like to point out Satchmo's coloring, a white, gray, brown, black brindle, simply marvelous.
You know, it's such a treat to watch a dog like this.
Now, let's see him in action.
Look how he makes eye contact with his person.
That's actually known as the treat stare.
How intuitive. And now he appears to be excitedly turning in circles.
Ah, the happy dance, so common with this group.
And finally, the loving face lick.
It's great how he just gets in there and, well, licks.
Fantastic. But really, the best way to know an amazing shelter pet like Satchmo is to meet one.
Visit theshelterpetproject.org today. Adopt.
Brought to you by Maddie's Fund, the Humane Society of the United States, and the Ad Council.
James Carmody here, your host of Rise Up Radio and a member of the San Diego Leadership Forum, with an invitation for you. Our annual summit is coming up on June 5th. San Diego Leadership Forum has been an integral part in helping leaders, CEOs, government, and civic leaders grow together, expand our legacies, and influence in San Diego for the greater good. On Tuesday, June 5th at 7 a.m. at the Hanley Hotel, we're celebrating another exciting year of encouragement, equipping, engaging our passions, and executing change in San Diego for the greater good. Join Gary Ridge with WD-40, Supervisor Bill Horn, and the rest of the Leadership Forum partners on June 5th at the Hanley Hotel. Networking begins at 6:45, program begins at 7:10, and goes until 9 a.m. You're going to want to mark your calendars for June 5th. Get your ticket today at SanDiegoLeadershipForum.org. That's SanDiegoLeadershipForum.org, and I can't wait to see you there.
Hey folks, James Carmody, Synergy One Lending. Are you in the market to buy a property and need to close really fast? Synergy One Lending and the Carmody team is your family-owned mortgage bank. Right now, there's low inventory, there's a lot of offers, it's competitive. Synergy One Lending and the Carmody team can close your loan in as little as 10 days. Call today to find out more. 858-525-3086. Call James Carmody and the Carmody team at Synergy One Lending, 858-525-3086.
AM 1170, The Answer.
You're just getting these awesome leads in for us, Todd. Anyway, this is Phil Kendrow and Eve Nasby today with Rise Up Radio, empowering San Diego servant leaders, encourage you to rise up. And now I'm more excited about Incredibles, too, so I really do appreciate that a lot. Hey, again, unfortunately, James is not here today. He's out performing brain surgery, but we've got some awesome guests in the studio today. And today we've got John Valencia, who's Office of Homeland Security for the City of San Diego Executive Director, as well as Kate Jackson to join us, the program manager for that same department. Welcome and good afternoon.
Thank you, Phil. Thanks, Eve.
Hey, you're welcome.
Glad to be here. Yeah,
really appreciate pulling you out of, you know, an awesome sunny San Diego day to be here in the studio with us.
So I know, such a burden to work and live in San Diego. Yes.
Yes, no, it's awesome. Hey, anyway, really glad to have you in the audience and stuff. Yeah. But you know, you guys have got some pretty awesome responsibilities that you have here in San Diego. John, how did you get to be the executive director here of Office of Homeland Security for the city?
Great question. I'll first say it's great. It's such a privilege to do what I do. I feel, you know, first and foremost, privileged to have the position that I do. I had a real great opportunity. I served 12 years active duty in the Marine Corps from 1995 to about 2007. And then in that time, as in addition to, you know, a tour to Iraq and such, I also had the opportunity to do a lot of emergency management and humanitarian assistance while in the Marine Corps. So I got exposed to that field, that discipline, and about the 10, 11, 12 year mark, I was looking around and considering what I wanted to do, stay in for a whole career in the Marine Corps, or maybe transition to the civilian world. And I saw this emergency management field. I saw it as being very valuable, very rewarding. Then I also had some interaction with the Marine Corps Reserve, so I knew it wasn't an either or proposition, staying in or getting out. That is, I could stay in as a reservist and then also pursue this emergency management field. So that's what I did, and I've been with this office. I got hired in 2008, and I've been with the office ever since. It's been a great privilege. Yeah,
that's awesome. Of course, John, we can tell he's a Marine because he's giving me the knife hand right now, and he's excited because we got the pull up bar in the studio too.
Oh, yeah, great.
Hey, and Kate, so how did you get to come into the office here too?
Well, this is my 20th year with the city. Originally, I started with the San Diego Fire Rescue Department as a lifeguard, and went up through the ranks and became a lifeguard sergeant. And my former chief actually transitioned over to Homeland Security after he retired. And he said, you know, I think you would be a great addition over. And so it's been about 6 years now, and I've leveraged my medical background. I was a medic in the military in the Air Force, and my emergency response background. And it's just been an amazing experience, a great team to work with.
Well, awesome. Thanks. I appreciate all the service for the city of San Diego, America's finest city. So that's awesome to have you here.
Wonderful. We get the best of the best right here in our studio. So, and I think the best of the best too, this is the best kept secret in San Diego, the Office of Homeland Security for the city. So can you talk a little bit about what your office does, what it's all about?
Absolutely. So the city's Office of Homeland Security is really your typical big city emergency management department. Mm-hmm. We call it Homeland Security, you know, to note the terrorism preparedness aspect. But most cities of the 10 largest cities in the nation, we're really the only one that call it Homeland Security. The rest call it some derivation of emergency services or emergency management. So we're your emergency management department. We're prepared for all hazards and all threats from human cause, such as acts of terrorism, to natural disasters. Mm-hmm. But most importantly, what we do is we support and coordinate the day-to-day activities and also the large emergencies of the other departments. So fire rescue, police department, the lifeguards division, the park and rec rangers, and all these other city departments, they are the principal and primary operating departments in terms of response. Day in, day out, they are the lead. We are every day, 365 a year, preparing and training and getting ready to support them when there's emergency or disaster that exceeds their capabilities. So we're like that operating system in the background. We'll come and have a prominent role when there are multi-department or multi-jurisdiction emergencies.
Well, our producer and guru, Jennifer Kriwak, while we were chatting before we went live, was talking about the collaboration that exists between the departments. Could you touch on that? Because it's rather unique in the U.S.
It really is. And I've now been with the city for 10 years and in this office for 10 years, and I hear it every time I go to a conference. And at first, I wasn't sure if it was true, but you know, it really is. Mm-hmm. It's said so often, but the collaboration that the San Diego region is known for is really unparalleled. And this is collaboration across all sectors of society, meaning public, private, and nonprofit sectors. Mm-hmm. And all levels of government, federal to state to local. And there's just a spirit of collaboration among all those organizations to find common causes and work common approaches to really then, you know, develop common solutions. It's everything from informal networking and the tradition that derived from that, but also it goes to formal agreements. I think, to me, I always point to the Unified Disaster Council and a joint powers agreement dating back to the 60s, in which the county of San Diego and all 18 cities in the county, all through a formal legal agreement, joint powers agreement that's renewed every 5 years, committed to common approaches region-wide nationwide in emergency preparedness and response. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the bedrock. Mm-hmm. And from that, then there's numerous memorandum of agreement and understanding among all those different stakeholders. Again, public, private, nonprofit, and then federal, state, and local. So
you've been doing this for a decade. What changes have you seen over the last 10 years?
Yeah, what I've seen is more commitment by localities or government organizations, but also public sector and nonprofit towards emergency preparedness. We truly are in a different world, as it were. Maybe the threats and hazards haven't changed, but our awareness have, mm-hmm. particularly after 9/11. But then not only 9/11, but then also continued actions. We see, you know, attacks, particularly complex coordinated terrorist attacks throughout the world that are low occurrence, low frequency, but high consequence. So the biggest change is, again, this commitment towards more emergency preparedness, a reasonable amount, of course, and appropriate measures that I didn't see when I first got in the industry or the sector.
So, you know, of course, we hear about the city. We know about efforts with the county and the state and everything. And you're talking about some of the nonprofits or some of the for-purpose organizations. Everybody's heard of the Red Cross. Are there any groups out there that we're not aware of that are putting a lot of efforts in that we should be hearing more about? I mean, we're very fortunate. We've got Sean Mahoney that's now the head of the Red Cross here in San Diego, is another rock star. We've been very fortunate to have him on Rise Up Radio here, and just a friend, Coast Guard captain. And, you know, we hear that organization. What are other organizations that
Absolutely.
We don't hear about?
Right on. And, you know, it's going to be bad because I'm going to forget a bunch. But so
don't
the
worry.
Ones
that
I mentioned,
this is my fault.
Okay,
though.
No. The ones that I mentioned are representatives. So, absolutely. There are some more, and some of them are not so apparent. So first one, some of them might be more apparent to people in the sector would be the InfraGuard chapter. So InfraGuard is a nationwide nonprofit organization that's affiliated with the Federal Bureau of Investigation, and it pulls together in local chapters critical infrastructure owner and operators to collaborate and coordinate and share information. So this chapter, the San Diego chapter under President Sandy Moule, is absolutely it's got to be the best in the nation. It's really extraordinary, and they do such a great job in the local FBI field office in coordinating their efforts, and all the members of the InfraGuard chapter here do such a great job. So that's number one, and in no particular order, by the way. And another one is the San Diego Cyber Center of Excellence, another nonprofit, and is committed to development of the cyber industry in the region, but also committed to the cybersecurity preparedness of the region as well. So great partner. Their CEO and president, retired Admiral Ken Slatt, is a real visionary, and it's a great opportunity, and it's a great privilege to work with him. Some of the less maybe apparent would be the San Diego Economic Development Corporation. So people think about, you know, of course, economic development in their lane, but they collaborate with us across preparedness as well, and look where there's a nexus between development of industry and development of capabilities that will serve the public in emergency preparedness. So great, great folks there. And I would throw in that with them as well would be the South County Economic Development Council too. So those are just some examples. And of course, Red Cross as well, great partners. But again, all of those are representative of the great public, private, nonprofit partnerships we have.
You know, I'd like to transition to the stuff that's on your website, which is so comprehensive. I was kind of looking at that last night with great interest. There's so many resources on there that I had no idea were on there. So can you touch on the resources that are on your website, and then kind of transition into what somebody as a plain, normal San Diegan resident should have as far as preparedness?
Perfect. Perfect. So about the resources, first I'd say great partners like the Red Cross, like particularly also the County of San Diego, Office of Emergency Services, and their state organization, the California Office of Emergency Services, great partners as well. So as far as resources, we are all pretty much, we are really saying the same message, where there's just different packaging. So whether it's you go to our website or the Red Cross or the County of Office of Emergency Service, you're getting the same information. And really comes down to really basic, we've heard it all before, but it's about implementing. So we'll always beat this drum. You know, having a plan, making a kit, having a communication plan, those are the basics. And if you go to any of those resources, those websites, whether it's us, the County of San Diego, or Red Cross, you're going to find the same information to help you prepare. It's basic stuff, but it's really important. And honestly, we need to do better as a society in being prepared like that. So that's what I'd say to everyone in San Diego.
Kate, you're shaking your head. What would you add?
Stay informed, absolutely. which is just highlighting what you all are talking about here. Yeah, have a plan, build a kit, stay informed.
So when disaster hits, you know, we saw this, people were bringing truckloads of water to the stadium, right? To Jack Murphy or whatever it was called back then. People want to help. So in those instances, yes, we are prepared. We've got what we need in San Diego. It's kind of easy to do that. What would you say to folks that want to jump in during a natural disaster or man-made disaster to help?
that's an important opportunity for the public to get involved. Part of what we do as emergency managers and planners is come up with plans just for that. We have a donations management plan that the county is writing right now that is financed by the Homeland Security Preparedness Grants. So having that and the increased capability of the Homeland Security Grants is so important. So basically, if you want to get involved, if you want to help out, get on that website and figure out what is the closest location, what they need.
Yes.
And as long as that's why build a kit, have a plan, stay informed. That's the stay informed part, because what you think they need and what they actually may need may be different. So it's very important to stay informed.
And on that stay informed point, on that stay informed point, again, another partner is the ready.gov movement. So they'll have the same information. Also, Alert San Diego, a lot of us are very familiar with that. That's the public information and warning system where different organizations, the county, the city, other cities can reach out to the public and deliver text messages, phone calls, emails as well to provide information about emergencies and warnings. So really important resources there. And also another one, back to stay informed and helping out in the way that's most productive, is 2-1-1. 2-1-1 is a great organization. They collaborate with us formally as well, us and the county, particularly the county. A lot of what we're speaking about, we have the great privilege of working with a great crew at the County Office of Emergency Services. And so much of what we're talking about falls under a county construct, and we collaborate with them and the other 17 incorporated cities.
Well, again, in the studio right now, we've got John Valencia, as well as we've got Kate Jackson from the Office of Homeland Security for the City of San Diego. We take a short break here in a moment. We come back, like to learn more about how we stay informed, how we get involved, and we'll talk a little more about if some disaster occurred, what should we be doing out there. Again, this is Phil Kinder and Eve Nasby with Rise Up Radio, empowering San Diego's servant leaders.
AM 1170, The Answer.
Hey folks, James Carmody, Synergy One Lending. Are you in the market to buy a property and need to close really fast? Synergy One Lending and the Carmody team is your family-owned mortgage bank. Right now, there's low inventory, there's a lot of offers, it's competitive. Synergy One Lending and the Carmody team can close your loan in as little as 10 days. Call today to find out more. 858-525-3086. Call James Carmody and the Carmody team at Synergy One Lending, 858-525-3086.
AM 1170, The Answer, San Diego.
Feel very patriotic now as we come back in there. Hey, good afternoon again, San Diego. Welcome back to Rise Up Radio with Empowering San Diego's Servant Leaders. Again, this is Eve Nasby's here with me, and Phil Kendro. James is out today, unfortunately, solving world peace. And in the audience today, we got John Valencia, Office of Homeland Security, as well as Kate Jackson. Really glad to have you all. And thanks for joining us for
a second round here.
Yeah, you know what? We were talking about at the break, a text. So if you guys can talk a little bit about that, it's an app you can download to be aware, be informed.
Sure. The county website has the San Diego Ready.gov app, and they send out text alerts. They gather information on the different cities affected, and as well as the city of San Diego, and we coordinate with them to provide the information they send out to the county residents for any type of information or updates, traffic updates, depending on any type of disasters. They're a great resource for county residents.
Yeah, so you can go to the county's Office of Emergency Services, their website, or just Google SD Emergency app, and you can download the app right there. And not only us, but the other cities then would provide information as applicable to the county. They would aggregate it and then make it available on that app. So it's a great development. Another example of collaboration throughout the region. Yeah.
Because of your decades of experience and the collaboration that exists today, you have the pulse on all the biggest threats that are possible that could occur. Can you talk about what do you guys think is the biggest threat to San Diego?
Great. And not only through the collaboration and just working in the field, but also, of course, we do formal risk assessments and threat identification and risk analysis. So I'll kind of break that down real quickly into two different lanes, the natural hazards and then the human or terrorist kind of caused events. In terms of natural hazards, there's two lenses we're looking at. What's the most catastrophic and what's the most likely? The reality is the most likely isn't what a lot of people would think. First and foremost, wildfire. It's flooding. For us, for the city of San Diego and for a lot of the San Diego region, what you see year after year that causes evacuations, causes threat to property and life is flooding. So that's something that's not really, you know, if you think about it, you'll, yeah, right? Like a lot of people
we
don't think about that.
We get one inch a
year. Yeah, yeah. So, but it's interesting. Certain areas that are prone to flooding will flood nearly, you know, very routinely. So that's most likely, but it's not the most consequential in terms of natural hazards. In terms of natural hazards, your most consequential will be a really massive Santa Ana driven wildfire or catastrophic earthquake. Although we're less prone to the direct effects of a catastrophic earthquake, just given the geology, than say the LA region. But that's under constant revision as well. And we're the region, including Tijuana and Baja California and nonprofit and government organizations are reassessing our real risk to earthquakes. And the sense right now is that our actual threat to earthquakes, not just the likelihood, but also the damage resulting, is a little bit more or a bit more than we've internalized the last couple decades. So there's a whole assessment, again, multinational, multi-sector society that'll probably be done in about a year or two, and then we'll have a better sense for the threat to earthquakes, from earthquakes. As far as natural hazards, I'm not going to, of course, say any specifically what any specific analyses or risk assessments have derived, but you have to look no further than the headlines internationally, particularly, and see these really catastrophic, complex coordinated terrorist attacks where there's multiple sites coordinated using different means. So that's something that certainly has a lot of our attention in terms of the terrorist threat.
Well, of course, we were at a fair in Rancho Bernardo this weekend when the news started popping up about downtown San Diego, and we had some of the elected officials down there just getting the first reports. And, you know, we're fortunate that it wasn't something which we've seen in Boston or something like that. And I'm sure that your office was jumping in that very quickly. You know, and you're talking about the hurricanes, you're talking about flooding. But, you know, what kind of lessons learned are you getting from, if it's a hurricane, that we're in Texas, if you know, we see, not that we're worried about volcanoes, but you're getting lessons learned from all these different entities around the world, I'm sure. Yep. So can you talk a little about how you're taking in that information?
Absolutely. Phil, do you mind if I go address something you just mentioned about the incident at the Civic Center?
Please,
this weekend?
Course.
Because
really,
and this is not coincidence, it's you make your own luck, and ironically, or not ironically and not coincidentally, but actually quite deliberately, on Wednesday of this week, was it Wednesday? The County Office of Emergency Services, a great partner in the region, a great leader in the region, with DHS, Department of Homeland Security, hosted a multi-jurisdictional, all-sector society tabletop exercise on complex coordinated terrorist attacks. So another example of this region being involved and addressing this. You know, of course, the planning went back, you know, a year or so. So this was something that they in the region forecasted, they knew it was an issue, knew something we had to do. And it goes back to other examples before. There was exercise that was a Coastal Warrior that happened a year before. The year before that, the city hosted with the FBI, the Joint Counterterrorism Awareness Workshop. So the point is, a whole range of activities that are programmed, they're thought out, and they support each other year over year, again, addressing that collaboration. As far as lessons learned, what we find, whether it's the volcano, say, in Hawaii, or hurricanes in the East Coast, or sometimes even more minor things, like remember that in Hawaii, that the nuclear missile notification, right?
Is
that right? Right. Mm-hmm. So of course, like any field, we're looking at those incidents and events and looking for lessons learned. What I don't want to overstate this, but we often find is that this region has benefited from decades of collaboration and commitment to the emergency management field. And what we find with a lot of these case studies that they're confirming what we're doing, and what we need to do oftentimes as a result of these lessons learned is maybe commit a little bit more effort, do a little bit more public engagement, or refine our protocols. But by and large, I really don't recall when the region, the discipline at large in the region has looked at a lessons learned and said, wow, we really missed that. We better get that addressed. By and large, they're confirming, again, what this region has inherited through decades of collaboration.
Kate and John, can you guys touch on the mistakes that maybe corporations are making? We talk about individual preparedness, but what about corporations?
Yeah, great. And you know, I'd say that corporations, and I will focus on corporations, but I say this works as well for families and individuals, is one is they don't prepare enough early enough. They don't prepare in depth enough and early enough. And then number one, the number two, there's this notion, even if we profess self-reliance, we really don't implement it. So those are the two things. Corporations, what's really challenging for them is, depending upon their size and such, they might not have a dedicated emergency management department or equivalent type of activity. So what they need to do is really leverage what's out there. Everything we just said before, Red Cross, ready.gov, the County Office of Emergency Services, our own office, 211, and all the other nonprofits and government entities that have programs, have resources, everything from general emergency preparedness, you know, staying informed, making a kit, having a plan, to even active shooter training that they can get from their local police department or even our office, you know, the whole range out there. So I think the biggest mistake, and maybe maybe we'll put it more positive, best refinement area for improvement is just avail yourselves of more resources. It's out there. Push away from the desk, send me an email. And I've done this a lot lately, this last year particularly, is I'll go and I'll meet with pretty, you know, everything from small corporations to larger ones, and just we'll just compare notes on their programs and ours and see where they marry up for training and exercises, but also where we could provide some resource and information to them.
And you know who's really, really stepping up is the school districts, mm-hmm. for unfortunate reasons, but they are really becoming aware of planning and staying informed. And that's important for parents to do, to consider. Mm-hmm. If something happens while you're at work, who is going to deal with getting your child to where their child needs to go? The schools are doing an excellent job of coming up with that. But talking about corporations and planning, what are you going to do with getting to your child or having a plan for your child? So keep that in mind, too.
What are companies just not thinking of?
I think they're thinking about it, but they're having a hard time chewing on this and getting something done about it, and that's active shooter training, because it's a very sensitive matter. You want to be prepared, but you don't want to make your workforce too anxious. Okay. And also, I think there's a reality to it, and not to downplay it, is that it's a low likelihood, you know, for any particular organization, but it's high consequence.
Yes.
So I think that's what they're having a hard time with. Particularly, also another challenge to active shooter preparedness is that you really want the best and most bona fide authority coming in there, you know, which oftentimes means a local law enforcement agency. So getting that coordination, getting that support can be difficult given, you know, the constrained resources, and it may be just the concern about bringing, you know, that kind of presence to a workplace. But I would suggest pick up the phone, call your local law enforcement agency, your local emergency management department. If you're in the city of San Diego, call us. And we have a really active shooter program. We've already now to date, I think, instructed about 1,700 individuals and about 65 organizations. I think that number is important, because what we don't do is what I call, we don't do retail delivery, I do wholesale. We don't go to an organization and instruct all 800. We instruct their department directors, their floor wardens, and they go ahead and then instruct down into their organization. So that 1,700 represents leaders who then expand that training throughout their organization. So that number is not really capturing the whole reach.
Educate the educators.
Yes, right. Absolutely. Yeah.
Is there a cost involved in that?
Not for us. So, you know, yes, it's tax dollars and that's already funded. So there is not for our office.
And
so,
you just hit on what's the most important thing. As corporations are facing, how are they going to prioritize their funds? It's hard to prioritize for emergency management when you have to look at something else that you're wanting to put your funds to. So there's another challenge for corporations. So absolutely, just to John's point.
Good point.
And John Kay, you have got so much information today, and it's so much that, you know, we've only had a few minutes on the radio with you all, and so there's so many websites. So we've talked, of course, about the sandiego.gov website, readysandiego.org, ready.gov, redcross.org. So many different organizations that are supporting you all, collaborating. And so we'll make sure to have that, of course, on our sdriseup.com.
Great.
We'll have
Thank
all
you.
Those links as we've been talking about that. So John Kay, I really do appreciate, again, you've got America's finest Office of Homeland Security is here again today. So John Valencia, and I really do appreciate that. Kate Jackson. Eve.
Yes.
This weekend.
Yes.
What do you have going on this weekend?
I'm going camping up in Julian, but there's a lot of exciting things going on in San Diego. And if anybody knows anything about what is going on in San Diego, it's the one and only Phil Kendro.
Okay, well, anyway,
why don't you tell us what's going on this weekend?
Well, a couple things are still going on. You got the San Diego County Fair. How sweet it is. Actually, I had an opportunity to go fly Buzz by the fair the other day.
Did.
So that was always nice.
Awesome.
So that's always going on until July 4th. So that's awesome. If you want to get dirty, it's the Marine Corps Mud Run. Of course, it's going on. I got one more day.
Are you doing that?
Unfortunately, I'm not doing this
year. Take the kids, take the wife.
I'm in trouble.
Come on.
John's getting mad. Academy as fellow Marines that we're not out there running around the mud. One thing I definitely would like you to join me is tomorrow on Sunday from 2 to 3 p.m. at Hilltop Community Park. We've got a Flag Day ceremony. So we're going to have a lot of the City of San Diego officials will be out there, county, and have a flyover by some good friends. John Flipper, a Navy veteran, be up there in the sky, and I'll be calling him in, so we'll have a great time. Awesome. And then World Beach Cleanup Day, World Ocean Day. So hopefully see a lot of groups out there helping to clean up those beautiful beaches here in America's finest city. Yep. And so just really appreciate that. So Rise Up Radio, you're here with us today, empowering San Diego servant leaders, encourage you to rise up. The always awesome Eve Nasby. I'm Phil Kendrow. And thank you, making sure you all rise up in San Diego. Have a great weekend.